I have written another article for New Eastern Outlook. It is titled U.S. Beta Testing China Blockade with Attacks on Russian Energy Exports. This is something that I've been warning about for a long time. I've warned about a U.S. blockade against China for years and years. And since this conflict in Ukraine erupted, I've warned about the U.S. wanting to impose a blockade on Russia. And we can see the U.S. and its proxies making incremental steps toward what could become a blockade against Russian energy exports. The U.S. is also striking at Russian energy production inside Russia. This is not just tied to degrading Russia economically as part of this U.S. proxy war against Russia and Ukraine. It is also about weakening Russia and degrading its ability to help China in the event of a U.S. blockade on China. If the U.S. imposed a maritime blockade on China, literally bombed all of its Belt and Road Initiative infrastructure, but Russia and China continued trading energy and raw materials, China might still be able to endure a U.S. blockade. So the U.S. needs to do something about Russia, and here we are. So I'm going to read this article. As always, I'll add additional information when and if necessary. I will show you all of the links that I referenced while writing this article. And I will begin. The incremental buildup toward an overt blockade against Russian energy exports continues, with recent aerial and naval drone strikes on both Russian energy production facilities deep inside Russian territory, as well as Russian energy terminals and ships used to carry Russian energy exports moving to and from them. The most recent incidents include attacks on tankers off the coast of Turkey and the Black Sea, and naval drone strikes on the Novorossiysk fuel oil terminal. There was also an apparent attack on a tanker involved in moving Russian energy exports off the coast of Senegal in West Africa, Newsweek would report. And so we have all of these articles here. Ukrainian naval drones strike two Russian oil tankers in Black Sea. Kazakhstan tells Ukraine to stop attacking CPC terminal after oil exports halted. And here's Newsweek. Russia-linked tanker attacked off African coast. What we know, so we see this expanding military campaign being waged against Russian energy production, terminals, and tankers. Not just inside Russia, not just along its borders, but in concentric rings working further and further away from Russia. Western media sources have, over the course of several years now, admitted that Ukraine's aerial and drone and naval drone campaigns are facilitated and directed by the United States through its military command center in Wiesbaden, Germany, as well as through the U.S. Central Intelligence Agency, CIA, which has assumed control over Ukraine's intelligence services since as early as 2014, the New York Times admitted. I've shown these articles many, many times. This was from last year, the spy war, how the CIA secretly helps Ukraine fight Putin. And it talks about how it has done this for more than a decade. So this wasn't at the start of the special military operation. This was since the U.S. overthrew the Ukrainian government back in 2014. The U.S. assumed control over all of Ukraine's intelligence services. It also assumed control over Ukraine's military, began reorganizing and training the Ukrainian military. Under the first Trump administration, the U.S. began arming Ukrainian armed forces. And from 2022 onward, the U.S. in its base in Germany has overseen every aspect of the war against Russia, from overall strategy to picking and hitting individual targets on the battlefield. Okay, and that's admitted in this article, the New York Times, Wiesbaden. The partnership, the secret history of the war in Ukraine. This is the untold story of America's hidden role in Ukrainian military operations against Russia's invading armies. And if you go through this article, it admits that it's U.S. commanders at the top of the chain of command of Ukraine's armed forces, not Ukrainian commanders. Okay? And so when you see Ukraine carrying out these attacks, it is the U.S. doing it through Ukraine. That is the whole point of a proxy war. So let's go over this New York Times article, 2025 article, The Secret History of America's Involvement in the Ukraine War. This is a direct quote. The Biden administration had authorized helping the Ukrainians develop, manufacture, and deploy a nascent fleet of maritime drones to attack Russia's Black Sea fleet. The Americans gave the Ukrainians an early prototype meant to counter a Chinese naval assault on Taiwan. So you can already see how it's all connected, what the U.S. is doing to Russia and what it plans to do to China, and how it's all part of one big global strategy. First, the Navy was allowed to share points of interest for Russian warships just beyond Crimea's territorial waters in October, with leeway to act within Crimea itself. The CIA covertly started supporting drone strikes on the port of Sevastopol. So the CIA, the U.S., enabled this and direct these attacks. Who do you think is still directing them and enabling these attacks? Do you think this is Ukraine doing it all on their own? No. Besides admittedly directing the attacks itself, the U.S. enables such operations through the use of unique intelligence, surveillance, and reconnaissance capabilities no other Western nation possesses. Thus, attempts to assign responsibility to nations like the U.K. and France still ultimately implicate the U.S., because Russia does this thing all the time, where whenever it's obviously the U.S. attacking Russia by proxy, Russia will blame it on the U.K. or on France. Because if it blames it on the United States, then there's this need to do something about it, and Russia really can't do anything about it. So they blame lesser powers beneath the U.S. Because there are potentially things they could do to retaliate. And this is to prevent an all-out war between Russia and the U.S. In regards to aerial drone strikes on Russian energy production facilities deep inside Russian territory, Reuters, this article here, U.S. intelligence helps Ukraine target Russian energy infrastructure. This is deep inside Russian territory. Reuters would publish its article, U.S. intelligence helps Ukraine target Russian energy infrastructure, and it would note, U.S. has been helping Ukraine mount long-range strikes on Russian energy facilities for months in a joint effort to weaken the economy and force President Vladimir Putin to the negotiation table, the Financial Times reported. U.S. intelligence has helped Kiev strike important Russian energy assets, including oil refineries, far beyond the front line, the newspaper said, citing unnamed Ukrainian and U.S. officials familiar with the campaign. So they're striking energy production inside Russia. They're starting to attack tankers moving energy, exporting energy from Russia to around the world. Again, a lot of people are just looking at this and seeing, well, this is all part of the conflict in Ukraine. They're not able to connect it to China, but I will show you how it is directly, admittedly connected. While the recent attacks on Russian energy production and exports is being presented by the Western media and even some independent commentators as being at cross purposes with U.S. President Donald Trump's various peace proposals, because the U.S. doesn't want peace. President Trump is in charge of nothing. So there is no peace process taking place here. They are actually the manifestation of longstanding U.S. geopolitical objectives aimed at stretching out and undermining Russia and beyond. And by beyond, I mean also China. Attacks on Russian energy production and exports, years in the making. So let's talk about all of the evidence pointing to a long-standing policy to cripple Russian energy production and exports that have been written down in policy papers before Russia launched its special military operation in 2022. In 2019, the RAND Corporation paper, Extending Russia, Competing from Advantageous Grounds. Let's scroll down to the table of contents. Once again, there are economic measures, there are geopolitical measures. They include provide lethal aid to Ukraine to trigger the now ongoing proxy war with Russia, and economic measures, including hinder petroleum exports and reduce natural gas exports and hinder pipeline expansion. So this is what they are literally doing right now, and what they have been doing for years now. Very clearly, these policies have been implemented for years under the Obama, Trump, Biden, and now second Trump administrations, and include first sanctions targeting the construction of Nord Stream 2. Remember, President Trump did that. He placed sanctions on Russia for building the Nord Stream 2 pipeline. Then he placed sanctions on Germany and other European countries involved in the construction and who would benefit from the construction of Nord Stream 2. And then the pipeline was just outright blown up. I wonder by whom. So first, sanctions targeting the construction of Nord Stream 2 and eventually its destruction, as well as sanctions placed on Russian energy production and exports from 2014 onward. The more recent physical attacks on Russian energy production inside Russian territory with the aid of U.S. intelligence, and now strikes on tankers used to transport Russian energy exports abroad represents an escalation of these long-stated U.S. objectives. So there's nothing new about this. There's nothing new about this. This is what they had planned to do. This is what they have been preparing to do, and now they are just simply doing it. Not only do these attacks have an impact on Russia's economy, regardless of whether this impact meets U.S. expectations, it also creates a dilemma for another nation targeted by U.S. encroachment, encirclement, and containment, Russia's close partner, China. A 2018, I've gone over this many times, and by the way, this is not the only paper talking about a maritime blockade of China. This is one of many, it's just one of the more frank, overt, and obvious papers. If you scroll down, they literally have a map here of how they plan on blockading China from a distance outside the range of most of China's military capabilities. And the paper talks all about the different obstacles to imposing a maritime blockade on China in 2018, obstacles the U.S. has since worked to remove. And there are suggestions in this 2018 paper that the U.S. is now beta testing against Russia as an incremental part of imposing this blockade on Russia. And they will eventually extend it to China. So a 2018 U.S. Naval War College review paper, Maritime Blockade Against China, would explicitly lay out a strategy to blockade China, noting the obstacles impeding any attempt by the U.S. to do so when the paper was written. An array of proposals were made in order to remove these obstructions, proposals that have since begun implementation, including the reconfiguration of the U.S. Marine Corps, right here. U.S. Marines are being reshaped for China threat. They are being reshaped. They have been reshaped into an anti-shipping force. Now, instead of a global fast expeditionary force, they're now almost solely designed to attack shipping in the Asia-Pacific region, to move very quickly across the region to these choke points with their anti-ship missiles and strangle Chinese maritime shipping. That is what the Marine Corps has been reshaped into. Proposals that have since begun implementation, including the reconfiguration of the U.S. Marine Corps into an Asia-Pacific anti-shipping force, enabling the U.S. to establish choke points depicted in a map included in the 2018 paper, which I have now shown you. The paper also discussed land routes China was creating through its Belt and Road Initiative, BRI, to bypass these maritime choke points, and the necessity to pressure nations hosting BRI infrastructure to close it down during any U.S.-Chinese conflict or face U.S. military strikes to physically destroy them. Yes, in this 2018 paper, it talks about a pipeline going through Myanmar. Right here is Myanmar. The pipeline allows Chinese ships to come here, offload hydrocarbons, and ship it straight into China via pipeline. This prevents them from having to go through this obstacle course of U.S. choke points. And so the U.S. said, if China can just do that, then all of this is for nothing. So we would have to demand Myanmar shut the pipeline down, and if they don't, we'll just bomb it. And as I've pointed out many times before, they're not waiting for a U.S.-China conflict to do this. They have already backed armed militants in Myanmar to strike at these pipelines. That is already happening now. There is already a dirty war the U.S. is waging against China to shape the battlefield, to shape the whole region to prepare for this blockade, as they are also incrementally imposing a blockade on Russia over the Ukraine conflict. So the paper also discussed land routes China was creating through the BRI, pressuring nations to shut the infrastructure down or the U.S. would strike it. However, long before any open U.S.-Chinese conflict has begun, the U.S. has already conducted strikes by proxy on BRI infrastructure, particularly in Pakistan. I did a whole article about this. I have all of the links detailing the attacks. I also have links to U.S. congressional resolutions and op-eds from as far back as 2011, where they openly say, we will back these insurgents in Pakistan to cut Chinese BRI projects going through Pakistan and crossing the border into China. The paper also noted the significance of Russia's and China's shared land border and the already large supply of energy exports Russia was sending to China in 2018 and how these exports would only expand over time. The paper made it clear that even with a U.S. maritime blockade imposed on China and the physical destruction of BRI infrastructure, like in Pakistan and Myanmar, Russian energy exports to China may be enough to allow China to endure. So, of course, that means they have to do something about Russia as well. The implications are clear. In order to successfully and fully blockade China and deliver a crippling blow to its economy and thus its continued rise, not only would the U.S. need to continue preparing for a maritime blockade and the targeting of BRI infrastructure, it would also need to degrade Russia's ability to supply China with energy, which they are literally doing right now. They are literally blowing up the production sites, producing the energy that would be exported to China. Now, just as the U.S. is using armed proxies to strike at Chinese BRI infrastructure, the U.S. is using Ukraine to carry out an expanding armed campaign against both Russian energy production within its borders and Russian energy exports around the globe. The 2018 paper, far from an obscure random brainstorm, reflects U.S. policy both past and present. Just as the 2018 paper linked Russia to U.S. efforts to contain China, the current U.S. Secretary of War, Pete Hegseth, has linked the ongoing U.S. proxy war on Russia to U.S. efforts to contain China and the urgent necessity of a division of labor, with which Washington's European proxies continue extending Russia and Ukraine while the U.S. continues its expanding strategy of encircling and containing China in the Asia-Pacific. And we just watched national security strategy published under the Trump administration. Again, if you actually read it, it is talking about nothing else but confronting Russia and China and using a global network of burden sharing to do so. Not only does the U.S. strategy of attacking and degrading Russian energy production and exports serve its stated objective of extending Russia, it also is a prerequisite for Washington's stated objective of containing a rising China. And in the National Security Strategy paper, it talks about containing China. Even if they don't say China, they're obviously referring to China. The nascent blockade the U.S. is incrementally imposing on Russia will also serve as a beta test for likewise imposing a blockade on China. So everything they're learning from doing this to Russia, they will be able to apply and adopt when applying imposing a blockade on China. Conversely, Russia and China's ability to counter this U.S. strategy will determine not just the viability of America's proxy war on Russia and Eastern Europe, but that of its growing confrontation with China and the Asia Pacific. Let's talk about Russia's and China's deterrence deficit. People don't like when I talk about weaknesses of Russia and China. They like to believe these are two all-powerful nations the U.S. doesn't stand a chance against. But we have to look at the strengths and weaknesses of both ourselves and those who threaten us to understand reality completely and to formulate the best solutions to the challenges posed to us. The U.S.'s ability to impose such dilemmas on both Russia and China through proxies affords it the illusion of plausible deniability. We see the U.S. pretending to be some sort of impartial mediator of this conflict in Ukraine. It itself started and it itself and admittedly it is running through Ukraine, from Germany, and working side by side with Ukrainians to target deep inside Russian territory, all of it admitted. So the U.S.'s ability to impose such dilemmas on both Russia and China through proxies affords it the illusion of plausible deniability, preventing Russia and China from retaliating directly and instead forcing both nations to retaliate against U.S. proxies the U.S. itself sees as fully disposable. Following attacks on Russian energy production and exports, Russia has threatened to, in turn, blockade Ukraine. We know that because we've seen headlines like this. Putin threatens to cut Ukraine off from sea after attacks on tankers. Does the U.S. care? The U.S. doesn't care at all what happens to Ukraine. It's fully disposable. Fight Russia to the last Ukrainian. People in Washington have literally publicly said this. So Russia has threatened to, in turn, blockade Ukraine. While this will have devastating consequences for Ukraine itself, it will do little to deter the United States, which devised this strategy enables Ukraine to conduct these attacks, and even directs the attacks itself. So the U.S. is actually carrying out these attacks through Ukraine. Russia is responding by blockading Ukraine. Ukraine will suffer the consequences. The U.S., who is actually driving all of this, suffers no consequences. Unless Russia and China can devise a means to actually deter the U.S. itself from its strategy of waging war by proxy. And again, the 2025 National Security Strategy paper outlines vastly expanding this empire by proxy concept, this burden-sharing network it introduced in the paper. So unless Russia and China can devise a means to actually deter the U.S. itself from its strategy of waging war by proxy, or prevent the U.S. from politically capturing nations and using them as proxies in the first place, that would be nice, the U.S. will continue to inflict damage on both Russia and China at little to no cost to itself. It'll feed Taiwan, Japan, and South Korea into a proxy war with China, and it'll just hang out in the back. What does it stand to lose? It knows China will inevitably surpass it by waging this war, dragging all of Asia down. Here, you know, the U.S. is here and China is here. The war enables the U.S. to drag Asia down to its level or even below it. That is the concept. If we cannot dominate the world, we'll just burn everything down into ashes beneath our feet, and then we will continue dominating that way. Alternatively, Russia and China can continue building up their military and economic capabilities faster than the U.S. can degrade or destroy them, preventing the U.S. from ever successfully blockading and strangling either nation socioeconomically, while continuing to invest in and build up a multipolar alternative to U.S. unipolar hegemony, which is very difficult to do. It's always easier to destroy than to build up. So Russia and China are fundamentally at a disadvantage. Only time will tell whether or not Russia and China fully understand both the actual objectives of U.S. foreign policy and the means by which to defend against and overcome it. The future of not only Russia and China hangs in the balance, but also that of all other nations, from those used as proxies by the U.S. to those the U.S. seeks to target or use next in its global pursuit of primacy, which, again, as the 2025 National Security Strategy paper makes very clear, the U.S. will continue well into the foreseeable future. So I hope people can see how this expanding, nascent blockade the U.S. and its proxies are trying to impose on Russia connects to China in many ways. It's not just a beta test the U.S. will use to then impose a blockade on China. Degrading Russia itself is a prerequisite to impose a successful blockade on China. If you cut China off at sea, bomb and destroy its Belt and Road Initiative infrastructure, and you don't degrade Russia's ability to supply China with raw materials and energy, then China can survive the blockade ultimately. If you cripple Russia's ability to support China, or if you can in any shape, form, way put a wedge between Russia and China, that will make a blockade imposed on China that much more likely to succeed, although it's not ever guaranteed. I hope people can see how this is all connected and the necessity of zooming out and seeing the big picture. It is all interconnected. The U.S. seeks global primacy. Everything it does is done with its global pursuit of primacy in mind. It is not myopically obsessed on any one point on the earth. It is doing all of these things in tandem. It is trying to create synergy and advantages between all of these different points of interest around the globe. If you thought this video was interesting, please like and share. Think about subscribing. It's free to do. It helps the channel grow. Check the video description below for other places you can find and follow my work. All of my videos go up on YouTube, Rumble, X, and on Telegram. Check the video description below for all of the links that I reference, including the article that I just read. Also in the video description below are places you can help support my work. I do not monetize any of my social media platforms. If ads pop up, feel free to skip them or block them. They're not helping me out at all. If you do want to help support my work, please do so through Buy Me a Coffee and through Patreon. To everyone who has been helping out, whether it's a one-time donation, donations month to month, or if you have no resources to spare and all you can do is help share and like my work, all of that is greatly appreciated. All of that helps make this work possible. I thank you, and as always, thank you for watching.